Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
You're listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Streaming online at radiofreebrooklyn.org and on the RFB app, radiofreebrooklyn.org/iPhone or radiofreebrooklyn.org/Android. We also have a newsletter that you should totally sign up for so you can find out about all the events that are coming up. Stay up to date with new programming, upcoming RFB events, interviews, ticket giveaways, special offers, a whole nine. You can sign up for Radio Free Brooklyn at R-E-A-D-I-O, Free Brooklyn. I know, I'm such a stickler for that. RadioFreeBrooklyn.org/newsletter. This is the archaeology extravaganza of your audio artifacts. I made that up on the spot. There's many ways you can describe Lost and Rewound, but ultimately, we strive to connect the dots between then and now and using the sounds from the past to help educate us and maybe entertain us at the same time. Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 non-for-profit organization. We're all part of this free and open platform to our community to promote media literacy, education, free expression, and we are relying primarily on you and your donations. Listeners like you help support our mission, so we invite you to make that one-time donation or monthly pledge at radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Every cent helps us continue to stay on the air. So please, support independent community media by pledging whatever you can afford, and remember that your contributions are tax-deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Alon here sort of sans anybody, but I will be giving you a very special guest momentarily, so stick around, y'all! This week's guest is a friend of the show. It's been a few years since the last time he was on. He goes by a DJ name, Champagne Sequins, who delves in amazing artscapes with analog, and he'll tell you about that in 1 second, because there is so much more to catch up with since the last time we have chatted with Wesley Marcarelli. Welcome, Wes. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Glad to be back.
Yeah, dude. Sorry, I totally realized as I was front-selling you there, because I was so excited. You and I met because we had that connection through the world of tapes.
Yeah.
I saw you and my old neighbor, Gabe Rains. I don't even know if he's still DJing anymore, but he and him were DJing tapes at this bar in Greenpoint.
Yeah. Rich Lane. It's like a Greenpoint, Williamsburg border there.
Yeah.
Land. Yeah. 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 We were doing, I had at that point, like a semi-regular tape night called Tape Heads.
Yes.
Yeah. It's something, occasionally it comes back, but it's not as regular anymore.
When was the last time you DJed? You're playing music. Your music.
I play my own music and do my like synthy drum machine vibe, and then also have like the DJ stuff as well. The last time we DJed was probably close to a year ago at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you miss it at all?
Yeah. Yeah. Organizing the nights and just thinking about music like that, I do miss. Things have like kind of transitioned into like more of a technical world.
Yes. I wanted to talk about that, yeah. Actually, because you were in school, you were in engineering school. We should rewind to 3 years ago when you were on our podcast iteration of the show.
Yeah.
And you were in engineering school, and I think you had one more year left, maybe.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
And you got an amazing job that we have to delve into more because I'm fascinated by it. You work for the fire department.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I was at that time, I think I might have been working for a synth manufacturer.
Mark Verbos, who yes. I know through the karaoke world of all things, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of a karaoke head as well.
Yeah. Him and John Autry, shout out to them. They were two handsome standbys of the audio engineering world, incidentally, as well. But yeah. I knew them as karaoke whores, much like myself.
Yes. Yeah. So. I fall into that world, too. Yeah. I was in Berlin just a couple months ago and actually got to hang out with him there. They moved their thing over there.
He builds boards. Like, he has his own boards that he makes.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
That's kind of where I've transitioned to at this point, too. So, yeah, I was there. Then I got this job with the fire department, which is really cool. And I've been basically do like fixing radios for the fire department. And so I did that for a year or so. And I've been working on kind of my own synth designs. And then that's now kind of picked up more. And I'm in the process of kind of fading from fire department into a synth building and selling and education world.
Do you have the means at your particular residence to cultivate, you know, being able to work on music and work on fixing stuff, I guess?
Yeah, I have the means there. And I've been, I designed like a set of prototypes from home. But, you know, it's after working a job that's like a 40-hour-a-week job and then going home and being like, oh, I have this other workshop at home.
Exactly.
It's kind of like you can fall into this place where work never ends. And so that's part of why Tapeheads hasn't been happening, because yeah. I'm kind of in like a never-ending work cycle right now.
That's preached to the choir.
But, you know, working on things that designing and making music and kind of that whole world has been where my passion lies. So it's not totally work, but it's still like, you know, still work being done.
You got married.
Yes.
Things change when you get married. I know how it is.
Yeah.
When did you get married, man?
This is June of 2016.
Mazel tov. Yeah. And yep. 2 years.
So a couple years. Yeah,
yeah, dude.
Yeah. But yeah, we've been together for, this is our 10th year. So we waited a while to get married, but yeah, it's been good, you know, living I don't know what the married life is. It's kind of like the life before.
It's how it exactly is.
But now I have like, you know, when my car insurance wants like a copy of the marriage license and stuff like, it's like I get some kind of deals. There's kind of like married deals that you can get if you like look for them, I guess.
Sure.
I don't know.
No, it's fair. And you know, the fact that you guys live together, I mean, that we, my wife and I were living together long before we got married. So we're actually coming up on 10 years next year as
well. Oh, cool. Nice.
And it doesn't feel like anything's really changed. I mean, there obviously are many different changes, animals. Yeah. Whole other thing entirely. Hold the Fiona on Instagram, just letting you know. Throwing it out there. Not, this isn't about me. Wes, when you got married, did you think, oh, I'm going to, you know, we're going to move out of the city? You're inclined to stay in the city. Like, you're ingrained here.
You know, we think about going upstate quite a bit, actually. But I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of tough. If I'm working this job, there's no real way to, like, get out of the city.
Yeah.
And my wife has an acupuncture clinic in Bed-Stuy. So mm-hmm. we are here in some degree, you know, for the time being. But if there's some way to, like, split time, it's so nice up there. I don't know.
I wonder if you could do what you do on a level that would be, I think, I don't know, I want to say financially responsible, because I think if you're going to be moving out of the city, you don't need to necessarily translate working on radios per se at that kind of level mm-hmm. to somewhere out of a metropolitan area. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if you were to move out of the city, how do you foresee taking your talents and being able to foster both for an artistic perspective as well as a vocational perspective?
Yeah, I think that if the synth stuff starts to take off in a way where I can kind of focus more on that and turn that into something that brings back some finances,
yeah,
that's the ideal. That's kind of like the dream. I'm still processing like how that works out in a way that like I feel okay about.
What new tricks have you come across that you're excited about, you know, when you're discovering, you know, new sounds and new techniques?
A new trick of making sounds?
Yeah, you're like a mutant when it comes to making sounds. Like you're in you've got an uncanny ability.
Yeah. The most recent thing I was working on was kind of like things that I built into circuits that I've been like fine tuning and getting to work. So one of the things recently was like realizing that I had added like a transpose function into the sequencer that I built, basically. Okay. So that like if you're sequencing a bunch of notes and you wanted to turn it up to the next octave, you could have an input that lets you like do that.
Amazing.
And I was working on that the other night, and I kind of go through this thing where like I'll design a circuit and then start using it and be like, oh man, like this like totally doesn't work, and like I don't know what I'm doing. And then like before I ever really play with it that much, if one thing isn't working, I just assume I did everything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been learning recently that generally most of it's right, and I just have to look at the simple problems that might be there.
Yeah.
That's maybe a long way to say that I went for months thinking, oh, this doesn't work. And then the other day I was like, oh no, I just wasn't using my own design right, or I kind of didn't plug the right thing into the right thing.
Overlooking the very basic essentials.
I think we all do that, right? Like, I was like, oh man, like this thing, whatever it is, you know, you just have to turn it on and off again or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I like kind of like a lot of things that happens every now and again in the studio. Big shout out to Tom Tenney, the station manager. When I come in here and something just isn't working, you know, you'd think after doing a radio show for so long, you would know the right buttons to press. And I admit, like half the time, I wing it. I really do. And in most cases, I can't afford to wing it because I have to be conscientious of other people who are using this wonderful studio that we have here in beautiful Bushwick. Improvising, I think, is probably the through line here because, you know, you kind of have to wing it in a lot of respects. And I wanted to ask you how you decided upon doing improv, and not just any improv, but my jam, musical improv through the Magnet Theater.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about improv for a number of years. I think we actually talked about it at some point. It might have been like at Gabe's, our mutual friend Gabe's house, like
sure.
a party. And
yes,
I was like kinda,
yes.
You've been like, oh, I did this musical improv at Magnet. And the part of me that feels like leaving the city kind of inspired that in a way, because I feel like I'm here and there's all these things that I want to do. And if I'm going to leave at some point, I want to make sure that I kind of got everything out of my system.
Absolutely.
You know? And so I thought about improv for years and was like, yeah, let me try this. And I did their like free intro course and then did a bunch of the regular improv. I only took one musical improv. I feel like I should do like the second level of that, but it's been fun. I like it.
There is something really special about it because when we are younger, and you and I have this also in common, because from your submissions that you contributed 3 years ago, there's a lot of, you know, boyish, you know, childish, you know, imagination of just like creating songs. Da 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 da.
Yeah.
Her Bible Talk, I think, was the clip.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you have that imagination to just create lyrics, just spot songs, just like right there, there's something really amazing when you can actually have enabling in the musical variety. So Frank Spitznagel, the music director at Magnet, and then all the amazing talented musicians who have come from there who do premiere on Fridays at the Magnet. It's just amazing to see it with even not just a brilliant pianist like Frank, but also just a full band. And it's amazing. And you're acting with really an incredible group of people who all got your back. It's a beautiful thing to watch and to be a part of.
Totally.
Admittedly, have only done some of the latter and more of the former.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's fun to like get back to that. Like, you grow up kind of naturally doing that, and then like it gets, I don't know, for maybe not everybody. I know, like, for me, it definitely was something that kind of got like pushed away. Like, no, you don't want to do that stuff. You've got to focus on schoolwork.
When did that happen?
Whatever it is. All along the way, I was getting pushed from being performative, and I think that
Pushed from who, you or from parents? Or
parents and school. And like, I went to a really Christian school for all of growing up. And like, there was years, like school years, where I would get like a detention like every single day. And it was just because like I wanted a performative outlet that I didn't have, I think. But like, as I look back on it, and actually doing improv kind of got me thinking about that some. And just thinking, man, my school, like, it was a really small Christian school. So there was no theater. There was no music. We didn't have art class. There was like
Connecticut, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yikes.
Yep. So we didn't have anything. It was just like, you know, you had all your subjects. You had recess and sporty things, which I've never been a sporty person. And then you have like all the Bible stuff. So I feel like, yeah, in some ways, like envious of people who grew up and had any kind of performance in school at all, even like band or anything like that. So like, the band stuff came through, you know, outside of school and kind of playing music with people. Yeah. And then later on in life now, it's fun to go back to improv and be like, I was missing this all along. I wanted to be...
You're making up for all the lost time.
Yeah.
Well, man, I'll tell you, improv was something that I think anybody in my age group could have afforded to take more of. I had very few opportunities that I came across upstate, and mm-hmm. I went to an artsy private school, I guess, so I was very lucky about that. I want to talk more about the exact music that you did create, in which we will get to in the second half. But mm-hmm. before we get to that, I wanted to also pick up on the fact that the suppression of which came from your parental units is, I think, pretty standard when it comes to a very religious household. Your parents were divorced, so you had two sets of households of which were, I think, not necessarily concurrently more religious than one another. Could you confirm that?
That they weren't
at the same time, or like there was one who was more, because there were Seventh-day Adventists for the listener.
Yeah. My mom and my stepdad.
But one became Catholic later on, right?
My dad was always Catholic, but like he got like really into it, like kind of progressively over the years, got like more and more like, I don't know, fundamentalist or something.
Sure. During high school though.
Yeah, that was big time. Like, yeah, he got into it then. He started working for a seminary, so that like up the game like quite a bit, you know.
And then your mom and stepdad as well were kind of starting to get there as well, but they were on a whole other track more or less, because they were more legit Seventh-day Adventist and stayed that way and still are.
Yeah They've, if anything, like kind of after I think parents in general, if you have like religious parents, they get really religious when their kids are of a certain age. And then like once you're out of the house, I don't know, maybe it's not everyone else, but I definitely feel like for me, like once I was out of the house and like doing my own thing, they kind of like loosened up on like a lot of the rules. And nothing like crazy, just like for Seventh-day Adventists, they like don't eat clams and stuff like that.
Yeah, they don't eat shellfish. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like from the sea.
Right. Now my stepdad will eat whatever. He doesn't really care anymore. But back then it was like, you know, the Sabbath is the Sabbath. And, you know, now he'll like watch a Red Sox game.
Do you think that they did it because they were trying to be responsible parents as opposed to going out for their own faith?
Yeah, I think it was a parenting thing. And maybe that's why some people get really conservative when they have kids too. Like people kind of think like, oh, what's the world going to be like for my kid? Or like, how's my kid going to end up? I had an older brother that got in like a lot of trouble too. Like, so they were like just totally freaked out that I was going to be like him.
I don't think we talked about your brother on the last time. What, how much older was he?
My brother's like about 12 years older than me.
Okay.
Yeah.
We may have talked about this actually. Okay. But he was considerably out of your life in a way. I mean, especially probably by the time you were like 10, you were just hearing about him in college.
Yeah, well, he didn't go to college.
Or, like I said, he was somewhere else.
Yeah, he was out.
He was figuring it out.
Yeah.
He was drinking.
Yeah, he definitely drinking. Yeah, yeah.
So, when you got to a certain age and you were in high school, it seems like the reins sort of came a little bit looser and you were able to rebel in your own way with music.
Yeah, and I think that came out in a couple different ways. And these tracks kind of came back into my life recently, and then thinking about sharing them with you, it's cool to like kind of look back and think about like the ways that I was finding myself and rebelling, but also a piece of me was clinging and like really kind of taking the religious stuff seriously. So I feel like I was able to, you know, have fun and be like a goofy teen in some ways. But I also definitely, there was a part of me that was feeling out all the religious stuff and like having a honest go at it.
When we get back, we're going to take a listen to some of that. And I'm personally very excited because you are a treasure trove of, and it's, I'm delighted that you could even be joining me for this. This is,
Yes.
Get excited with me, get embarrassed with us, and we'll be back in a little bit. This is Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Glad that you're here with us this week on Lost and Rewound. If you want to contribute any of your old audio to our program, you can do so. Just email lostandrewound@radiofreebrooklyn.org. Send me pitches. Any old audio you have from your yesteryears, be it your sounds from your play, maybe a song that you created with your friends, or crazy found recording from private life in the house. Yeah, we want to hear that too. Anything then at all, and that might be applicable. We want to hear what you have in mind, and we look forward to your contributions. If you want to hear any of our past episodes for some purposes of, you know, perspective, Lost and Rewound has an entire catalog on many different platforms, including SoundCloud and Spotify and iTunes. If you go to our Podomatic page, that's the most easily up to date in terms of all the Radio Free Brooklyn fare. And furthermore, you can download our episodes if you don't have iTunes or Spotify. LostandRewound.podomatic.com. And check out our catalog. On the SoundCloud tip, if you go there, you'll hear some of our past episodes, even going dating back to season 2, which is where we come now to Wes Marcarelli, this week's guest. And the last time you came on the show, I remember exactly what you contributed. You had like clips from home.
Yeah.
You had like TV sound bites. It seemed like you were playing a card game with your dad. You were singing Soft and Wet by MC Hammer.
Yes. The MC Hammer cover. Prince cover. Yeah. I didn't remember that was a thing until re-listening to that. Yeah.
And then Bible Talk, as I think we have referred to before.
Yeah.
Where you read a passage from the Bible.
Yeah.
And then, just like some exercise.
Lots of riffing, kid riffing on different topics. Yeah.
Tell us about the band which you were a part of and the song we're about to hear. First of all, you have like an entire catalog. You have a whole like CD collection of this.
I wouldn't say there's a whole CD collection.
There's no discography? It's just one CD?
There's a CD and there's a few tapes of different takes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the best audio quality of the. There's another version of this song that's just like horrible audio quality, but like a much better performance. And this is the like, oh man, like I really didn't hit that note. We were probably, I don't know, it was maybe like 16 or something like that when we recorded this. And it was in, I want to say it was like a Cheshire Bible Chapel in Cheshire, Connecticut, that they were nice enough to let us practice there. And I was playing guitar in high school. Like I said, like I kind of like, someone had given me a guitar and I just kind of picked it up and was learning on my own and just
self-taught completely.
I ended up taking lessons, but I started out playing so much that my parents were like, oh, he really likes this. So let's just like, you know, get him some guitar lessons and whatnot, which that was very nice.
Well, they clearly supported you in some artistic way.
They did. Once I showed some interest like that, they were like, okay, we'll push this along.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy at school who played drums, and we realized that we had this heavy metal connection.
Heavy metal connection.
There was a group of us, probably a handful, maybe like three or four people at the school that would like listen to Metallica and just like that was our jam.
Yeah.
You know, among other things. But this particular group at school, we were into that. So our friend who was a rabid Rush Limbaugh fan was into singing. And so we formed this band because that's kind of like where we were at that point. This is like a very conservative Christian school.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know how lyrically, how I think that I kind of agreed with things at that point. I don't know if I would have been as vocal. I don't know if I would have taken it as seriously. I don't know.
Okay, look, it's okay. You're not singing on this track.
No.
But you are.
But I'm supportive of what's being said, which is cringeworthy in itself at this point in my life.
Shall we talk about it?
Sure.
After we listen?
Yeah.
All right. The song is called I'm Not an American, and the group name is?
This is Distortion X.
Distortion X with I'm Not an American on Lost and Rewound.
I'm not an American. I'm not an American. I'm not an American.
I'm not an American! Oh! American creed, kill the unborn, watch them bleed. A wake up call is what we need from the politics of pro-choice free. Demonstrations peacefully, up and down forcefully. The news will sound silently. First Amendment tragedy.
We trust not anymore, see more causes. once at punch when the turning point is out to us. America with equality for all men, even for those who haven't been born yet. That's the U.S., so it's time a citizen. So for now, I'm not an American.
Okay, if I may, that was awful.
Yeah.
The guitar, I mean, that guitarist has got some chops.
Yeah.
But the rest of the band.
You might ask yourself, did this guy actually get guitar lessons? No, it was all right. But yeah, the performance was a little rough. I remember that. I remember, yeah, we're all happy to have, you know, this kind of good recording of a song. And then we're all like, oh, man. It must have been the pressure, you know.
Who set up the recording session?
It was recorded in the church, like actually.
It was recorded in. Oh, okay.
In the like the main church area where you'd record the church band, like we just used their church band setup and then recorded our thing. So someone was there helping us record it, and maybe the pressure got to us, and it, you know, some of those drum fills are kind of comical.
There were four of you or five of you?
It was three or four of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And, yeah. And you were all about it or like, or did it take a while for that to like come about?
Just like musically, we're just like, I wish that had sounded better. Like yeah. We had done a better job of it, you know?
Well, whose idea was it to record in the church?
the drummer went to that church and kind of had the connections there. And
got
so it.
It
was like, yeah, so-and-so can help us record and we're going to do it this day. And then it was all live, you know, a lot, just like recorded it all live.
How much did Distortion X perform after this particular recording was made?
There were various iterations, but it was mostly like recording and playing occasional church youth group shows, but it was not a lot.
What was that experience like?
I don't know, like kids like that are, you know, like teenagers, especially that are like deep into the church. They think it's cool that someone's playing anything that's not like acoustic-y, I don't know, hymn kind of stuff.
Let's talk about the guy who's singing.
Yeah.
Who's this gentleman?
This is a friend of mine. I feel like I don't know, maybe I didn't really ask him permission.
No,
oh, no. I mean, I can talk about him. I just like, I figure we're just like, just in case, I don't want to like, I don't know. I don't know if I always
protect
like,
the innocent.
Weird. Exactly.
It's all good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll call him Bob. And Bob.
Yeah.
Bob was a very passionate conservative.
Yeah. He was
Christian
like
conservative.
Yep. He was a diehard Rush Limbaugh fan. And he would wear a shirt to school that it was Hillary Rodman Clinton, where there was some kind of like Dennis Rodman joke that was about Hillary, but like Hillary hating from like day one.
Mm.
And would talk about Vince Foster being murdered by the Clintons, like everything that the crazy conservatives believe now. He was on the ground level of that. Also, as you heard in the song, this like this kind of like just gross, the side of pro-life that's just like obsessed with this like violent imagery, and it's just really like really dark. So that was him then, and in the past year, he's like was like
just the past year.
I shouldn't say the past year. Like he got progressively more progressive, and in the last election cycle was voting for Hillary, which was, you know, like, and it was like having it out on Facebook arguments with like people who were conservatives about how dumb they were. So if anything, as horrifying as it is to like listen back to this song and kind of like where we were at, like in our mindsets were at back then, and like growing up in this conservative Christian environment. And both of us, like when we went to college just a year or so after this song, we both went to Christian colleges, and then like through Christian college, like kind of, he's still a Christian and fairly devoted, but he's liberal progressive Christian, where you're like, if all Christians were like this guy, like I might actually take that seriously. I'm not an American, which back then had a lot to do with this conservative pro-life politics, but feeling like, I think that this Americanism, or specifically that conservative idea of like what being an American is, like kind of corrupted Christianity in the U.S.
It's been completely corrupted. There's no question. I mean, I can see that, and I'm not Christian, but you see it, you feel it, you can sense it everywhere.
Yeah.
It's this entitlement, and it's this really seething underbelly that tries to sort of take advantage of the teachings of an entire religion and turn it upside down for the betterment of one sect of people. It makes absolutely no sense, and it needs to be stopped.
Yeah. And it's like, everything's turned into this specific thing. And if you're not like, you know, pro-life, then you're not a real Christian or something like that. Like where it doesn't, I don't understand what that doesn't have anything to do with the, you know, what's being said in the Bible. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm curious what your transition point was when you finally woke up and realized, or was it more gradual, but you realized that what was being fed to you was there was an element of disbelief that you were being strung along for as long as you were.
Yeah. I think that it was in a way helpful to go to a Christian college that had a more open-minded look at the world, because there's a lot of fear when you grow up that way and mistrust, and you're kind of fed that, like, people who aren't Christians are going to lie to you. And like, you know, there's so much fear and you assume everyone's lying to you, that being in a space where you can talk to people and talk about the Bible and talk about how like, and maybe this isn't really a good pitch for a Christian college. I mean, there's plenty of people that like this guy, you know, that he went to one and he came out a Christian. I'm not the Christian that he went in, and maybe not the Christian that his parents want him to be, or, you know, or imagined him growing up to be. But when you talk about the Bible and you talk about like the Genesis story and talk about how that's impossible for that to be literally true. Mm-hmm. And then once you take that step, then it's like, what else is like that? And actually, that's funny because the Genesis story was like actually a big part of that. Like there was some verse where it almost literally says like, once Adam and Eve ate this fruit, God was like, we have to kill them now. Like there's something almost identical to that. And there's this verse where you're just like, wait a second, like these people just wanted more knowledge. And like now, like you're like, got to kill them. Like, I don't get, who is this guy? Like this whole idea, that was like one of the parts where like everything kind of started falling apart. Yeah. It clearly seemed that the idea of this deity was based on like control and like revenge. And obviously, like the Old Testament God is so much different from like, you know, New Testament Jesus. But the fact that that's like the beginning of everything was knowledge is bad. That's kind of like the story of Adam and Eve is like, knowledge is bad. Don't ask questions.
Knowledge is bad, but aggression is good.
Right. Yeah. Obedience and aggression.
Well, obedience to evidently only a
to
certain
the aggressor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, the aggressiveness that's occurring in that, you know, metal music does tend to attract that sort of ability that channels that sort of that desire to, you know, let anything out. And, you know, with between, you know, going to hardcore shows and, you know, going mm-hmm. to metal shows and people letting out their aggression that way through moving and just enjoying the music when you're a spectator versus that of being somebody who plays that music after you were a part of this band. Were you still a huge fan of metal music, or did that veer away?
Yeah, no, I was still a fan of that music, and my musical taste kind of transitioned, like going back and forth between electronic based stuff and hip hop, and then also like heavy metal.
But yeah,
the heavy metal stuff progressed into like trippy metal or something like that, or listening to Tool and being like, that was, I think, Tool ended up being like kind of like part of the transition out of being a Christian.
Yeah.
As well, or like
that's
bands
a good
like
one.
That. Yeah,
that's a good,
you know,
it's a good transition artist for sure. I wanted to pick up on what you said about hip hop because let's preface to say that we were supposed to listen to this track and like two good improvisers were making do with it, but
yes.
The tape is fine. The tape player that was provided today for our recording did not work, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, but the good news is that we can still listen to it, so you'll be able to hear it as the show ends. We do have some time left, and I wanted to talk more about what that group was about.
I had a friend who had like Fruity Loops or some things like that on his computer, and we would make beats, and also we would get like loop tapes where it's just are like kind of instrumental tracks. And the guy who's singing the metal song, we would make tapes for him that were like rap tapes. I think partially because we knew he hated rap, but we would make these rap tapes that were kind of like designed for him, and then would have like different like hip hop parodies and stuff like that. But that was just, for the most part, like an audience of one. And we would just kind of put all this time into making like a full tape of skits and hip hop songs and then like hand it off to him for him to listen to. I don't even know if he ever listened to them. He might not.
What was your rap group's name?
Busta Just was my friend Justin.
Okay.
And then I was Crazy Wes, really.
That's on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy Wes and Busta Just.
Yeah.
So it was just you two, or there's there
and Busta Just's younger brother was there. I don't remember what his rap name was, but his younger brother was part of it too.
I was gonna say it's like Busta Just Jr., but
something
like that.
Like yeah, Dave something Dave. I don't know what.
That's amazing.
DJ Dave maybe.
How many tracks did you end up making altogether in that for that album?
Actual songs, there's maybe like six songs on it, but then there's like a lot of skits and just like.
Like a good De La Soul album.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Prince Paul formula.
Yeah.
The track that we are going to hear, since we're hearing it after we talk about it, which is unusual for the show, but we will do it anyway. Lyrically, could we get a little brief as to what the lyrical content will be?
This is a song about chicken. The name of the album was Chicken Soup, you know, referring the Christian element that we had grown up in. But this is definitely not a Christian song. and there's a lot of cursing on it. And it's just about various ways that young men enjoy eating chicken. I'll say this, that I have the third verse. There's two sets of verses, and I've got the third one in each of them. And this is embarrassing, I think, in that both of these tracks have like male cringeworthiness in different ways, like the just like weird stuff about women that the guys rap about. I appreciate that I didn't really get drawn into that as much as they had. So it was nice to anyways listen back and be like, oh, okay. I was afraid you listen back and you're like, oh man, I was saying all this like horrible stuff. But I listened back and was like, okay, I was the more reasonable rapper here.
What were they rapping about?
It's like, you know, I eat chicken while I'm fucking my wife or something like that kind of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know.
When you listen back to derogatory lyrics as a 30-something versus, you know, when you were listening to it as a teen, it doesn't age well.
No. I don't know. I don't think I ever felt like really great about it at any time, but definitely now it's like, oh, man, like how could you? Why? I wish that just could go away and not, you know, there's a lot of lyrics that you listen back to that you're just like,
Systemic of the culture. It's systemic of the trends of the hardcore rap culture, of which we became embracing of because of the production value, which mm-hmm. was admittedly raw and energetic and amazing. Mm-hmm. But then the lyrical content becomes more abrasive and we get really carried away. And it's like one-upmanship, I think, is the
right
way to put it.
Yeah.
But you never got into that.
I think that, oddly enough, even though there's like swearing on the rap song and on that whole cassette has a lot of weird stuff in it, I definitely, looking back at my contribution, was like way tame. And I think that the Christianity that I was raised with, like,
starting to really come out.
At least it influenced me in that way, that it was like, you know, don't talk about women like that. Like, that's not cool.
We're Facebook friends, and I saw you post a status update that drew me so in. And it was how you... By working at the FDNY, a fantastic opportunity. You get to see what you see and hear what you hear and do what you do. Mm. The fact that you work with people who are extremely conservative and and derogatory towards women. I'm curious how your life as, you know, before and, you know, the teachings that you had when you were growing up, how that manifests into now when you're around men who can't even talk like actual adults.
Yeah. Just working in an all-male workplace,
yeah.
There's like, even the guys that are more progressive or liberal still have like, this is the first time in my life that I've been in a situation where like someone's trying to show me porn on their phone at work.
Oh,
I'm just like, God. Dude, what the fuck is wrong with you? Are you kidding me right now? Recently, it was like this whole like, you know, Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford's testimony and basically guys at work being like, oh yeah, I think that she's lying. And it's having to really like shut people down and be like, why the fuck would someone lie in this scenario?
Why would
and
someone say that?
Who's
she's
benefiting
lying?
From lying? Of the two people, who's benefiting? You know, like having to like have these confront these guys and be just like, no, like what you're saying doesn't make any sense. Sometimes you don't want to get into political stuff, but sometimes if no one says anything, then people just get to go on like kind of spouting their bullshit all the time and like never get checked. One of the things that you learn about growing up as a Christian, at least I did, was this idea of like being different from the rest of the world and like really embracing that we have this kind of certain standard. And like we said, that's been corrupted. That idea of like standing up for what's right and like making a point to say something, I think really is something that stuck with me. And in a way, I feel like there's plenty of stuff that I grew up believing that I still really appreciate and cherish these ideas about respecting other people and life and all that stuff. The like basic Jesus concepts, I think, are really great. When people that are in a place of privilege, they've already got everything, you know, like they have the power, are bullying other people or acting like shitheads, then, you know, you've got to toss some tables around like Jesus did. And be willing to like call people out. And so I think, I guess that's, you know, maybe that answers your question.
Yeah. All I want to just tell people who say shit like that is just cut that out.
Yeah.
Just like Uncle Joey, cut it out.
Yeah.
Between the content that you were making in high school as a way to just sort of go along for the ride and then realizing that as an adult, you can't just turn a blind ear to, or a deaf ear or a blind eye effectively to any of the kind of things that you're hearing said. You kind of roll with it because you're afraid of saying something and you turn the other cheek. But now you realize that you can't necessarily just stay mum.
Yeah.
You're a good man. I talk too much, but I think I'm getting down to the core of Wes Marcarelli.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I hope something is... I hope it's good. If it's good, I'm glad. Yeah.
There's a lot that you're doing. Are you anywhere that people could find you on social media to stay in touch with you or find out anything about projects or performances that you have coming up?
Yes. The one thing I definitely wanted to mention was, speaking of trying to make a difference, I have this project STEM Modular that I've been working on. So that's like synthesizers that I'm building and like basically trying to make it a platform for education, because in the same way that when I was growing up, I was discouraged from maybe some of the more performative aspects, I also kind of had a piece of me that was kind of into sciencey things that was also oddly discouraged. And I think that other people might go through that. So I'm trying to spread the gospel of science, technology, and engineering and math through creative projects.
That's
STEM Modular on all the platforms, STEMMODULAR. And I'm Champagne Sequins on Tumblr and other places.
On Bandcamp.
And Bandcamp.
Yes.
And SoundCloud, if you want to hear my musical synthesizer musings.
What a mensch. You are a good man. And it is a privilege in the strict sense of artistic integrity that I am getting your presence here, gracing the studio today for this edition of Lost and Rewound. I am grateful for people like you in our lives.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me. This is fun. I love what you guys do.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Lost and Rewound. We'll be back next week with another edition, maybe another special episode. Who knows? These weeks, we don't know. It's always unpredictable. Sometimes we talk about farts and sometimes we talk about the state of the nation. But whatever the case is, you can find us here again next week here on Radio Free Brooklyn from 3 to 4 p.m. Love each other. Keep yourselves up and enjoy the rest of your day. Lost and Rewound, Radio Free Brooklyn.
I love chicken.
Yo, chicken. Kentucky fried chicken is finger licking good. I would eat it every day if I could, but I would be getting fatter from the batter until I explode. Chicken a la mode, eat it on the road, stop in the bathroom and drop my load. Yo, pause to the hot and spicy, cause I'm flying icy. I fuck my wifey with chicken in my hand, you don't understand. Chicken is the essence of life, you need it much more than a wife. Push easy, my kneesy, I eat chicken while I'm fucking my wheezy. Yeah, word, what, huh? Chicken's what I live for. Out for chicken, I'd be a whore. For that crispy goodness, I sell my soul. Chicken makes me out of control. Just fill my pie hole with chicken, makes me happy. Without chicken, I'm feeling crappy. Without my chicken, I'm like Popeye. Without his spinach, I'm finished. My skills diminished. I need two crispies to find myself with the finest chicken. To get my hands on the almighty chicken that be tight, B. And it makes me feel light, G. We having chicken tonight, see? What?
Chicken at Chili's, it tastes like a dream. Whether spicy or sweet or in a saucy cream. And TGI, oh my, gets me high in the sky. Pineapple Jack Daniels and a nice hearty side. Chicken wraps, chicken naps, chicken laps, chicken snacks. Wendy's, Mickey D's, D&D should be. Cause there ain't no place where chicken ain't nice. I even ate it once from a cook who had lice. Ain't no shame, it's all in the game. Kinda lame, but chicken don't live up to its name. Bold and spicy, just so nicey, not pricey, word to my lifey.
I eat chicken when I cut glass, when I'm busting a cap in your ass, or when I got the chrome to your dome, or in your own home, I steal your chicken and eat it like it's my own, munch on it while I'm on the phone, too much chicken make me accident prone, if you try to take chicken from me, I get sick like a killer bee, and attack you like a swarm far from the norm, see, cause I can't live without it.
done in the fridge, I doubt it. I always got a stash resulting from my immense pile of cash. When I'm just about to run out, I hit the chicken spot, no doubt. Bought all the chicken so no one else can have any. I got more chicken than rappers got henny. Ooh, I love it, barbecue. Teriyaki, I love you. Boneless, of course, the meat is the source of the mad fly taste. The bones are a wig. There ain't no match for the meat of that bird. Everything else is absurd. Yeah, word, huh?
Yo, son, chicken be the best, can't protest. I got a zest that makes me pee my pants. Get up and dance and look for romance. I get high like crack a week. One more drumstick, haha, yes indeed. Take heed, don't disturb, cause after I eat my chicken, I have to drop dirt. Word, be without chicken, absurd. You tasting the last wing, no way, nerd. My chicken be only good with iced tea. I eat it when I pee. See, I don't mess with my shaky baked fried chicken.
Yo, listen.
What?
Shout out to Holla. Chicken, all day, every day, anyway, no time to play. When it's on my plate, I ain't got nothing to say. In the morning, afternoon, and night, when I eat it, there's no fear in sight. Get up, get down, in town, on the ground, lots of sound. If you get out of your seat and smoke a pound of chicken, it's great all around.
I need it, believe it, I receive it and eat it.
I love chicken.
No doubt, goodness, what it's all about. Now everybody shout.
I love chicken.
No rejection of this chicken perfection. I need chicken in my section.
I love chicken.
I love chicken.
Every kind I try, I can't lie. Without this chicken, yo, I die.
Yeah. DJ Dave. Crazy West.
Nutty Just.
Word, we love chicken.
A little too much.
We ain't got no fear of no salmonella. None of that. Word, that shit is whack.
But chicken is fat.
Word.
I'm going to create a song out of nowhere, cause we have to get some. Everybody now cares about the things that we do not care about. I don't ever want to go down south. I'll stay in the north. I'll stay in the north. We'll stay up here and go right forth. We'll stay in the north.